We continue our story tonight, the study tonight of Abraham. And in this series, we're looking at a lot of aspects of Abraham's life. And we're kind of in a mini-series within that series right now of Abraham and Sarah and Hagar. Although we're going to, as we progress through these chapters of Genesis, we're going to focus on Sarah and Hagar tonight and next week, and then we move on to some other things in Abraham's life, and then we'll come back to Sarah and Hagar and the next kind of the next chapter in their lives. But we continue to look at this woman named Sarah, who would later miraculously by the hand of God become the mother of Isaac and fulfill the promise that God had for Abraham and Sarah to have many descendants and many children. But they're not at that point in their lives now. They're at that point when they have heard the promise of God, but they've not seen that promise fulfilled. And sometimes that's where we live in this world, in earth. That's where we live in humanity. Sometimes that's where we live as God's people and children. God makes promises, and we believe that they're real. We believe that God will do what he says, and God will not abandon us, and God will be with us, and God will be present, and God will help us, but we don't always know how, and we certainly don't know when. And this story illustrates a time when God made an incredible promise, but it was hard to imagine how it could be fulfilled, and for Sarah especially, and perhaps Abraham. They had doubted that God could do what he said he would do. And this story that we read in Genesis chapter 16 is a painful story of what happens when we don't believe that God is going to do what he says. And we take and can take our circumstances in our own hands and make decisions that may be outside of God's best will, God's most perfect will. And if you're here last Sunday night, you know, we painted a story that was pretty painful of Sarah and the struggle that she had and what led forth to this part of the story that we're going to focus on tonight. But we also are thankful that in the midst of our human frailties and how we mess it up, that God doesn't leave us there and he cares about us. And in this story, we see that picture as well. And kind of within this chapter 16, little mini-series, last Sunday night, tonight, in our topic of Hagar and Abraham and their role. And then next Sunday night, as we look, as God steps in with his mercy and his help into a situation that is very difficult and painful. I did say last week that Genesis chapter 16 gives us kind of the first half of the conflict that emerged between Sarah and Hagar, and there's another chapter to it that is also painful and difficult, and we struggle to make sense of it. I know I struggle when I'm studying and reading it. What does it say to us? What does it say to me? What does it say to Christianity? What does it say for us who say that we believe in the authority of the Bible and we should read it and study it and God speaks to us? And, you know, what we should not say is the people in the Bible were perfect. And so we look up to them in every way. I mean, the reality is God gives us the scriptures in part because it reflects who we are and where we struggle. And maybe we can see when we see the failures of others, it can help us to avoid some of the failures that they had. And maybe God in his mercy can help us to learn from the experiences of people in the Bible. Sometimes people on the outside really poke at Christianity and they poke at anybody that believes in the authority of Scripture and they say, well, look at the failures of those people and you call them God's people. Why would I ever want to listen and follow? But see, they're asking the wrong question of the Bible. They're holding up the authority of the Bible in a false way. The purpose of the Bible is to teach us the heart of God. And God does it through success and failure. He teaches us through the success of some of his servants and great stories that, boy, we can just go rah, rah, and boy, isn't this fantastic? But God also teaches us through the failure of people. And if we're willing, God can teach us through our failures too. God doesn't give up on us. He didn't give up on Abraham and Sarah. He didn't give up on Hagar. And It's part of the story, part of the chapter. If you turn with me to chapter 16, I'm going to read the first six verses again of this story. Last week I read basically the first six verses and I focused on Sarah. Tonight I'm going to read the first six verses and we are going to focus for a while on Sarah, but then we're going to turn our attention to Abraham and his role and a little bit of Hagar. Genesis chapter 16, verses 1 through 6. Now Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar, for she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant, perhaps I can build a family through her." Abram agreed to what Sarah said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarah, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarah said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." "Your servant is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarah mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. We certainly would acknowledge that this story is a deeply painful one. It's not just painful for the words that we read in these verses, but it's painful for the history of humanity, and the conflict that comes out of this story has incredible consequences and tentacles that reach into the history of humanity between the two largest major faiths in the world, between Christianity and between Islam. We know that in this story, by this time, Sarah is 76 years old. She's past the years, presumably, of the ability to bear a child. And later on, when the angel will come and tell her she's going to bear a child about 4 years later after this point, and the angel comes, and what does Sarah do? She laughs. She just says, no, this isn't even possible, that it can be done. She's well past the years of being able to bear a child. Of course, because people lived longer then, it may be that we can't really relate exactly how old she would have been in childbearing years, but she certainly believed that she was past the possibility of having a child, plus her many years of marriage to Abraham and not being able to conceive. Last week we talked about the depth of her pain and how the pain drove so much of what Sarah did and how she responded to this deep need and this deep pain in her life. Well, we know that for the last 10 years, Abraham and Sarah have been in the promised land, and God had brought them to a place that he promised to Abraham. And yet for those 10 years, again, hoping to conceive but never being able to. And so finally it says in verse 2 that she comes up with a plan, and her plan is there must be a descendant for her husband, for Abraham, and really for her as well. And so she comes up with a plan and says, "Abraham, I give you my maidservant Hagar, whom they had picked up in Egypt." And one of the consequences of going to Egypt, whether or not that's what God wanted them to do or not, certainly we speculate that maybe it wasn't God's best for Abram, but he made that trip to Egypt when the food was scarce. And well, we just know that when he came back from Egypt, he brought a handmaiden named Hagar with him. Well, Sarah comes to Abram in the story and says here, "Abram, this is what I want you to do." And we're told that Abram agreed with a plan. And so no other context, really no other narrative in the story. Abram agreed to the plan and it took place, and the baby was conceived. And when the baby was conceived, things began to change quickly. What looked like maybe the solution that Sarah thought would be the solution, maybe Abraham thought would be the solution to a need for a descendant, a need for a son, the need for a child, and to begin that process, if you would, of God's promise of enough descendants as the stars of the sky to Abram. I mean, what may have looked like a solution for them turns out to be trading one deep pain and one problem for an even larger historic pain and problem that would exist and will exist up until the end of human history. But we also know from this part of the story that Sarah was despised by Hagar. So we know that there's two sides to the story of the relationship between Sarah and Hagar. The pregnancy confirmed that Sarah was the barren one. And I think about, well, why did Sarah feel the way she did? Why did Hagar feel the way that she did? I mean, I know for us that's somewhat speculation. And why so much animosity and trying to understand the culture of that day and how it was typical for a man to have a wife and other concubines to raise children and would be part of the patriarchal story for four generations. But for Sarah, perhaps the pregnancy that came so easily and quickly, as far as we know, only confirmed that Sarah was the one at fault. Maybe Sarah felt within her heart that, yes, it must have been me. I can't bear a child. I mean, there could have been the thought, well, maybe it's Abram. Maybe he can't father. Maybe God just doesn't know what he's talking about, or God messed up on this one. But the fact that Hagar got pregnant and got pregnant so quickly would have probably, I would imagine, been salt in Sarah's wounds even deeper, that so easily his concubine had become with child. And then so Sarah's feelings and Sarah and Hagar, they were thrust into this world of feelings between them and envy and hurt and pain that was deeper. Perhaps for Hagar, she began then to look down at Sarah, and maybe she had the same feelings about Sarah that Sarah might have had about herself. And for Sarah, it was more and more humiliating as the days went by, and the knowledge that this girl, this servant, this underling that was given to me as my maidservant to clean up after me and fix my meals and take care of the animals and do whatever I tell her to do. And now she has the one thing that is most important to me. You can just imagine the intensity of feelings within Sarah, perhaps as it grows even greater and the pain is deeper. And Hagar, I'm sure, would sense that. And not knowing exactly Hagar's heart and how she handled that, how she began to look down on Sarah and further humiliating and the conflict going deeper. And what Sarah thought would bring relief and satisfaction brought instead an irritation deeper into the wounds that she felt and she was struggling with. So adding to the growing mess is then a break in the relationship between Sarah and Abraham, and the tension that begins between Sarah and Abraham. The problem is spilling over. The problem is getting bigger. The problem is beginning to infect other places in relationship. And verse 5 tells us about that relationship between Sarah and Abraham. Verse 5 says, "Then Sarah said to Abram, 'You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering.'" Now Sarah believes or says in her heart and maybe attributes to Abram that, "Abram, you're really the one that's responsible for this. You're the one that's caused the misery that I feel." You remember back to last week we read that Sarah had blamed the Lord for her barrenness. And "The Lord has kept me from having children," Sarah said. If you call that blame or whatever, but Sarah had believed that it was the Lord that was responsible to keep her from having a child, and now she blames Abram for the wrong that she is suffering. I notice in chapter 21, I read chapter 21 also in thinking about this message in the next chapter in the story, that Sarah would have very strong feelings against Hagar's son. I won't take time to read the passage, but she basically says he'll have no part in the inheritance. And again, we see the deep struggle inside of Sarah and the pain that is there and is a part of her life. And at least for now, we don't mean that this is the last story of Sarah at all, but at this time in her life, she's struggling so deeply and in so many ways. For Sarah, this whole situation has brought pain and sorrow. There's been nothing that's come out of it that's been good for Sarah. And so at this point in the story, we can maybe empathize, maybe feel somewhat of the hurt and the pain that Sarah is feeling. It certainly brought out the pain in Sarah, but also it brought out the weakness in Sarah and the weakness in her, maybe in how she dealt with it. For we read in verse 6, we summarize Sarah's actions in really these 9 words or so. Then Sarah mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. So we go from Sarah's deep pain and the hurt to the mistreatment. Now there's a step in between that we'll look at soon also in the story, but the pain has led to bad decision, and bad decision to consequences, and consequences then to a part within Sarah that we know is not good and right, and so she begins to mistreat the servant Hagar. The tensions had grown between them, the despising on one end and whatever that meant of Hagar, and mistreatment on the other, and it had boiled over into open hostility, so that Hagar had to leave, and there had to be a break and a celebration. You might say, however you summarize this part of the relationship between Hagar and Sarah, Hagar, you might say, had the most influence. She's the one that, because of the ability to have a child and what happened, she was able to have the most influence, but yet Sarah had the most power, and she was able to mistreat Hagar, and so she leaves. Your servant is in your hands, Abram said. Do with her whatever you think best. Then Sarah mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. And then we think, well, where's Abraham in this story? And that, of course, is another way to look at this story. And that part too, sometimes it we think is where was Abraham and what was he doing and did he do the right thing? I kind of ended last week's sermon with a question. I ask you, do you think Abraham did what was right in that particular part of the story? And unanimously you said no. I did have a couple comments later, you know, maybe a different side of that, and reading what Abraham did or didn't do initially when Sarah came to him and said, Abraham, I want you to take my maidservant. And we all seem to unanimously say, no, Abram did not do the right thing. Obvious, we know about Abram that he was in a situation that whatever he did, it didn't turn out to be the right thing. He was in the middle of a situation that was very difficult, and what we do know in the story is that Abram agreed to what Sarah said, and whatever you say about Abram's culpability in this, we begin with Abram agreeing to Sarah's initial plan. There's not really a whole lot to say about some things in the story. It is what it is in the scriptures, but what do we learn from it? What do we hear from it? Abram's weakness may be coming out, that he did something. On the other hand, maybe Abram and Sarah both deeply believed that this could be God's plan. It wasn't unusual for a man who had no children through his wife to take on a concubine or even another wife. So we kind of measure this story by 21st century Christianity and our perspective of the law of Moses and all those things. But you realize this all takes place long before God revealed the law to Moses and the Israelite people. So our culture or norms are not the same as what we find in this story. And so at this point, you could say that both Sarah and Abraham might have well believed that this could have been God's plan. I mean, after all, as far as we know, when God made the promise to Abraham, it was to Abraham. It wasn't to Abram and Sarah. God didn't seem to come when they were together sitting outside looking up at the sky, but he said to Abram. I think most of the time we would think, well, if God promised it to Abram, then he meant it to be through his wife, and that would make sense. But it may be, it's possible that Abram and Sarah, or maybe just Sarah, or maybe just Abraham, may have thought that this was God's plan. Maybe this is how God was going to accomplish it. God doesn't always do things the way that we think that he will. I mean, man, that there's so many stories like that in the Bible where we might predict God would do this, but he does something else and he accomplishes his plan in an amazing way. And so whether or not Abram should have and would have violated anything he believed, I'm not sure by this. All we have is the simple words that Abram agreed to what Sarah said. At the least that we could say, I mean, Abraham had no record here of questioning or opposing or or really saying, Sarah, are you sure this is what you want to do? And are you sure that this is the right thing? And are we able to handle this? I mean, there's no record of that. I don't know if that was a part of the story. At the least, what we can say of Abraham is that he did what he was asked to do. And in some ways, you can say maybe that was the right thing to do. On the other hand, do we say of Abram, did you not provide leadership when God wanted you to do that? And we think of this story, and the consequences are so staggering in this story that we have to ask the question, Abram, were you outside of listening and being the husband and leader of your home that God wanted you to be? It could be that he thought that it was God's plan. Maybe he thought that the great covenant was for him and not for Sarah. Or maybe he just believed that it's the right thing to have many wives. There's nothing wrong with that. And if God wants me to have descendants through other wives, then I'm willing to do that. It never seems throughout this story anywhere else that Abraham doubted God or didn't have the faith to believe that God would do what he did. But maybe he certainly didn't have the faith to believe that God was going to do it the way that he would have expected that. Maybe he doubted, but whatever the case, these words are forever descriptive of one of history's greatest conflicts. Abram agreed to do what Sarah said. There's also the question with Abraham, did he allow the despising? Did he somehow encourage it? Was he somehow complicit in Hagar's treatment of Sarah when she became pregnant? Again, we don't know in the scripture. Did he try to stop it? Was he aware of the tensions? Did he try to do anything about that? We don't know. What we do know, again, is that he could not control the consequences. And that's what happens when we're outside of God's will and we step outside of God's plan. Abraham could not control the consequences. Abraham is seen as the greatest person of the Jewish faith and arguably the greatest person of the Christian faith outside of Jesus. Along with Moses and David, but you think of the influence of Abraham over our faith and certainly other faiths, even the Islamic faith, and how dearly Abraham is held by Jewish people, Christian people, and Islamic people. But yet, Abraham, for all the strength that he had and faith that he had, could not control the consequences of what happened on this day and in this story in Genesis chapter 16. What we do know is that he couldn't control the consequences. The feelings got more strained as time went on. I would imagine as the pregnancy continued and as Hagar began to show and whatever happened, the conflict grows and the problem magnifies. And again, we look at the second part of Abraham's response. As the conflict grows, it's like Abraham doesn't really know what to do. And Abraham, as Sarah comes to him again, and what does Abraham do? He gives Sarah the green light to do as she is inclined to do. I mean, this is what he says: "Your servant is in your hands." Abram said, "Do with her whatever you think best." And she did at the time, at the moment, and again, the consequences continue. So, what do we say about Abraham? Certainly, it's a complicated question. We think, is this one of his greatest failures? Is this a time when Abram did not do what he should have done? And it brings to question, at least for me, when I'm studying Genesis and I'm studying this story about Abram and what does it mean to put up your hands and say, I can't do anything about it? Or what does it mean in how we respond to conflicts around us? Your servant is in your hands. Do whatever you think is best. And so she does. And instead of it alleviating the problem, it doesn't alleviate the problem. It gets worse in some ways. Well, there's two more characters in this story that we need to focus on. I've tried to primarily focus on Sarah and Hagar to this point. I want to, for a few more minutes, focus a little bit more on Hagar and a little bit more about her. We know some things very just straight from the story. Number one, Hagar was Egyptian. She was an Egyptian servant. what her culture was, how she got attached to Abraham and Sarah. We don't have a lot of information about. There's only a couple of verses that talks about Hagar becoming the servant. However, in Islamic theology and other writings of ancient times, there's a lot more information about Hagar. Whether it's true or not, obviously we don't hold those things as authoritative, but there are a lot of writings about Hagar because of her connection to the Islamic religion and her becoming the mother of Islam, in the same way as we think of Isaac and his descendants as being the father of the Jewish people and the line of Jesus. Well, but we know that she was Egyptian. We also could say of Hagar to this point in the story that she is an obedient servant, not only an Egyptian servant or a foreigner in some ways, but she had been attached to Abraham and Sarah for a long time, at least 10 years. How long they were in Egypt, we really don't know exactly, but we know that she had become attached to Abraham and Sarah and been close to them. The fact that she's kind of presented as the maidservant, the number one servant to Sarah, would tell me that there was a closeness in the family. And up until this point, there seems to have been maybe a close connection between Sarah and Hagar and Abraham at this place. And we know that she does what she's told to do in this part of the story. She doesn't seem to be given a choice. Maybe she was willing, maybe she was consenting, but maybe not at all. It could be very opposite of that, like, why am I being made to do this? And on the other hand, she might have believed that she was a hand of God. Possible that she had converted to the monotheism of Abraham, which characterizes Abraham believing in one God, which Abraham kind of becomes the patriarch of monotheism in the Old Testament, and that was very important and will be passed down from generation to generation. We are not like the others who worship many gods. We worship one God, the true God. Well, Hagar to this point is the obedient servant. Maybe willing, we're not sure, but certainly there's nothing about Hagar that tells us that she's not at this point. But then on the other side, we see in her character that she begins to despise Sarah, and she becomes a despising servant. What all went into that, of course, we speculate a little bit about. We're not sure exactly, but we know that she despises her mistress. She despises Sarah, and so that seems to change completely the relationship. And from this point on, then everything seems to change. Something did change inside of Hagar, we find in the story, and her attitude changed. Maybe when you think about her attitude and her story, I mean, all we have is when she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. I read that verse and it says, when she knew she was pregnant, that would seem to be very early on in that relationship between her and Sarah and Abraham. It's the knowledge of the pregnancy that seems to set something off in this part of the story. Her attitude changes. Maybe she felt that now she deserved a higher position. She had been the servant. She had been, maybe you call her the slave of Sarah and Abraham, maybe a higher office than that. But whatever the case, maybe Hagar has now come to believe that she deserves something better. I mean, she's the one that will bear the offspring of this great man Abraham, who was wealthy, who had great authority and influence and all these things. Maybe within the heart of Hagar, she began to feel like it's not right that I'm called the servant girl anymore. It's not right that I'm seen as the underling. And maybe she felt like, well, why was she ordered to be Sarah's child bearer? I'm going to bear the son. I'm going to bear the child. Perhaps for Hagar, she might say it wasn't fair. It wasn't right. It wasn't her choice. And you may say of Hagar, she became trapped in this downward spiral of consequences mixed in with the life of Sarah. And for Hagar, too, the journey became very difficult. And really the next part of the chapter, the last part of chapter 16, kind of shows us the misery of Hagar. The first part shows us the misery of Sarah, and the last half of the chapter shows us the misery of Hagar as she too becomes trapped in this spiral. Maybe she felt for a long time, maybe she experienced Sarah's pain and bitterness. Maybe she was able to somehow be a comfort to Sarah, but when her role changed, then the perceptions of her changed as well in her eyes and also in Sarah's. Maybe she thought, well, now I'll be Abraham's wife. Maybe I'll have a husband of my own. Maybe I'll have value in myself. Maybe people will see me different, and maybe I deserve more than I've gotten in life. I mean, here I was taken out of Egypt, out of my home country, out of my family, out of who knows the circumstances she came out of, but maybe she thought, maybe I'm worthy too, and I should have more. And it caused within her a heart of despising Sarah and whatever came with that. But then we know that Hagar became the abused servant, willing, it would seem, and then trapped, and then she became a target. She became a victim, maybe, if you will. She represented for Sarah an ugly thorn in Sarah's life at this point, and Sarah took it out on her, and so she became that abused servant. And rejection and isolation and conflict now will follow Hagar, presumably the rest of her life, although we don't know from the scriptures a lot about the rest of her life. We do know some things, and we'll see them in chapter 21, but again, from outside of the Bible, there's so much written history about Hagar, some that may be true and some that may not be true at all, but her life was no picnic, if you will. We're going to see where God comes to her and comforts her and makes a promise to her, and that's the next part of the story. But in some ways, Hagar gets the lesser of the deal in this spiral of consequences. This decision would take on a life of its own. The decisions that are made here with Sarah and Abraham will take on consequences that will impact not only Hagar, but her son and his development and his character, and then his 12 sons and what they become and how they become so negative in biblical account of their concept of God, and how it just leads to this whole mess of that emerges in the Islamic religion and is carried out today. I mean, boy, when you just see what's going on today, and you know it goes back to this story in chapter 16, this is a pivotal chapter in the whole Bible. It's a pivotal chapter of human history. I wish we could say some great things about it, but there's not a whole lot to say as we study it and look at it. Hagar will go on to become and drawn as a great person. She will be portrayed and understood to be the mother of the Islamic religion. And for from her line will come generations that are enemies of the Jewish people, those that occupy pretty much the eastern side on the other side of the Jordan River, not that they always were in the beginning were, but that will emerge the tensions between those people and the people in the Promised Land some 350 years later or beyond, when the Israelite people come up the eastern side of the Jordan River and they encounter these tribes and nations who oppose them, and then they get ready to come into the Promised Land, and God says you got to wipe them all out because they're so evil, and all those things, all these are coming from tensions that are found in chapter 16. And then some 3,000 or so years later, we have the birth of a man named Muhammad and the religion that emerges from Muhammad's teaching sets a stamp on world history that we see today. Well, I'm thankful to say this isn't the end of the story. There's one more character in the story. I mean, we've kind of looked at Sarah, and we've kind of looked at Abraham, and we've kind of looked at Hagar, but there's one more character. And if we leave out that character, then we probably have lost probably the most important thing about the story in this chapter. One more character, if you can say it that way, for verse 7 says, I only read through verse 6, but verse 7 says, the angel of the Lord found Hagar. It's not the end of the story, verse 6. It's the middle of a lot of pain, but the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. Aren't you glad that in the Bible, when we come to sometimes the darkest place, we find that God is still there? So the next 19 verses or so of the chapter is the fourth character in the story. And that's a pretty neat picture. It's a picture of a God who knows where to find people that are hurting. It's a picture of a God who sees injustice. Picture of a God who is aware of the mess. Picture of a God who heard. Hagar weeping. And he responds. So I hope in the pain of the first six verses that we can read on and know that though God has given us a free will, and I don't know why God allowed this to happen. I don't know why God didn't say, Sarah, why God didn't somehow comfort her heart or somehow just let her get pregnant when she was 76 instead of wait till she was 86. I don't understand that. Why did God wait? And that's the story of the question of free will. Why does God allow us to mess things up? Why does God allow us to fail? Why doesn't God just say, Abraham, Sarah, I know you're getting impatient. Just hang on a little more. It's coming. Sarah, you're going to have a baby. I know you think that's unbelievable, but, you know, I wonder why God didn't say that to Sarah. But somehow in our concept and theology of God, we have to recognize that there's something about free will. Well, God will allow us to make our own decisions. Somehow God did not design us to be like other creatures that have no moral basis or moral identity, but he allows us to choose. And that's really the part of the story right now that I'm kind of pondering, kind of wrestling with. Why did God allow it to happen? God steps in verse 7, and what he does and says when he does that. That's amazing to me. I'm not saying that part here at the end because I have the answers to that. I'm trying to hear what this says to me. So I want to encourage you and challenge you, if you want to continue in this study, have your Bible open in chapter 16 and read it and think about it and pray about it. Say, what does God say to us? What's practical in this story? What does God say to Hagar when he finds her in the desert weeping? What does it say about God and us? What does God say about free will? What does it say about God in the midst of our failures and our circumstances? This is a challenging chapter. It's a fascinating chapter. But this is arguably, and others you can identify to, this is a pivotal chapter in world history. One of the most, probably, you know, this is chapter 21. This is a pivotal chapter in what happens for the rest of the Old Testament and the New Testament, all the way up to the end of time, maybe to the very end of Jesus coming back. If the conflicts that are in the Middle East right now, and they get stronger, we could be very near to the end of the world and the earth as we know it. You know, I know other people have said that in other cultures and circumstances, you know, reading about how people perceive the Second World War and how people perceive the Cold War. But this is one of those times in history when we wonder, is it coming to an end? Is it all going to come to the end, kind of as it started in this story in chapter 16? Is it coming to the end of the book of Revelations? It may well be something to think about and search for and ponder. Thank you for being here tonight, and hope you have a good week, and may God watch over you and bless you. You're dismissed.